It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this second day of August, 2023. The last full month of summer is underway as of yesterday. And, oh, God. I said it when warm weather began. Summer's going to be here and gone before we know it. But this is the horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between, and the Great Glow Brown. And whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. Thank you for downloading the podcast and being part of this remarkable little community. Thank you so very much. If you would please like and subscribe wherever you're downloading, I would appreciate it immensely. So would everybody else, because we want to grow this little community. It would be very, very nice. Hi, I'm Robin. If you are listening live right now and you pop by the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, y'all. And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, but I don't know if we're going to have time for a lot of prayer meeting information, you know, a lot of tales of faith in action. Because yesterday caused a lot of things to, well, start moving. And I have a feeling we're going to be living in interesting times for a little bit. I confess, however, I'm spoiled. I really am. I wish every day could be like yesterday. Could somebody please indict that adipose jiggling wad of insecurities and petty jealousies and grievances every day? Because it was fun to ponder the possibilities. It is, you'll see what I mean. You'll see what I mean. Do we know who? Because I've been paying attention all day long. Do we know who Co-Conspirator 6 is? Do I still have a dog in the hunt? Because this would be, if it's Jenny Thomas, I mean, it could be a number of people, I grant you. But that seemed just weirdly vague. And so, too, the news stories that filtered out today. I don't know. And, of course, with all the news stories about the indictment, you know that there were little tidbits along the way that I latched onto. I saw a news story today, and one of the things we remarked upon yesterday is that, yes, the former occupant of the White House, the former squatter, you know, Trump and squat are just two words that you don't want to think about. I'll be okay. Those weren't hiccups. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so it is that we say thank you to our second day of the month subscribers. And that means thanks ever so to Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you so very much. Elizabeth is our only subscriber for the second day of the month, so we need subscribers. We do. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast in a financial form, just go to headon.live and click on the PayPal interface there. Put in $10, say, in the box and say, make this a recurring donation. And that way, well, that way you've set it and forget it, and you will be, you will know that you're out of something less than a half of a stick of chewing gum for every hour of programming. I mean, we are a bargain, especially when you consider the content. But that having been said, thanks also go out to our dear friend Felicia, who sent me a note earlier to say she'd been on a little vacation. Been on a rare vacation. I know they're rare. So I haven't been able to listen. I hope you, Felicia, I hope you went somewhere really, really fun. I'm back now, she says. I was aware of the big hole you were facing. I'm sending $50 today. Please use it in support of a pledge or any other way that makes sense. Hang in there. We need to support you. All the best, Felicia. Thank you, Felicia. That's so very sweet, and I appreciate it. We all do. And so on this second day of August, after what can only be considered a community-made miracle to round out July and close that deficit and finish tomorrow, well, or finish yesterday, sorry, finish yesterday, then it's terribly impressive, and thanks to Felicia, we start the program only $250 away from being even two days into the new month. This, of course, is August. July, even people who don't know they're doing it, celebrate the birth of Julius Caesar, and in August, we celebrate the birth of Octavian, who would later decide that he wanted to be Augustus. He wanted a new name. And I'm down with that. Down with that. But anyway, thanks again, Felicia. I know Darlene is as fervently in hopes as I. If only it would be Jin Jin. But Popok of Midas Touch thinks it's another lawyer like Peter Navarro or some other weirdo Trump used, MAGA, make attorneys get attorneys, as all the other co-conspirators are lawyers. Is Jin Jin a lawyer? I can't recall. If so, then she may still be in the running, albeit sixth place. But I think Jack isn't done. There may be lower-level conspirators he'll go after next, and Jin Jin may be among them. See, that's the thing that tickled my little brain when we began going through the indictment yesterday. The indictment lists lawyers. Co-conspirator number one is a lawyer. Co-conspirator number two is a lawyer. Co-conspirator number three is a lawyer. Co-conspirator number six is a political consultant, I think is the actual language. So that would, for me at least, would indicate that co-conspirator number six is not a lawyer. So I don't know how the Peter Navarro fits into that into that scenario. I was proud of the work we did here yesterday. I was proud of the conversation and the input from the whole community. And thanks to Todd for being patient with me and giving me a sounding board to bounce the ideas off of. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Theo. Theo said the loveliest thing yesterday, and it just gave me a good feeling to read it. I have to find it here, but I wanted to share Theo's words with you because it was so uplifting. There it is. Theo said on the show post for yesterday, listening to Robin go abruptly into breaking news mode without advance warning is always amazing, and her reportage analysis is always first rate. Recommended. Thank you, Theo. It's really good for a girl. And first cowbell of the evening goes to our pal Texas T. It's a meme, of course. It's the photo of the tacky Mar-a-Lago bathroom with the chandelier over the potty, and the banker's boxes stacked around. The caption reads, "Bed, Bath, and Beyond a Reasonable Doubt." Ah! I'm going to enjoy every one of these. With gusto and relish. But what I was saying a moment ago, let it be Jin Jin, please. Please let it be Jin Jin. The moral arc of the universe bends toward Jin Jin. How dare she? And I don't know how we wink at it if it turns out it isn't. I don't know how Jack Smith does. Like I've been saying since January 6th, I want them all. I want them all charged. I want them all prosecuted. And some news about the judge who will be hearing the case in D.C. Nitwit Nero is, of course, already pissing and moaning. But I saw a little... It was just a couple of words. And I feel pretty sure it was a Politico article. I didn't even save it. Because the article didn't have any information in it that we didn't already know. It's just a matter of how things are framed. In discussing the fourth count of the indictment, deprivation of rights... The article I was reading referred to it as a Civil War era statute. Well, I mean, no, not really. Because Civil War era is basically James Buchanan, still arguably in the top five of the worst presidents we've ever had. And our only bachelor president. He, you might recall, was dear, dear besties with Rufus King of Talabama, whose congressional colleagues referred to as Nancy. Homophobia was a thing then, too. And Rufus and James, of course... Well, they had a long relationship in D.C. there are no smoking gun mash notes or anything, but it was an open secret that, and they were not the only ones to do so, but they were kind of devoted to each other. They slept with each other every night. But Civil War era means James Buchanan, Abraham Lincoln, and Andrew Johnson. Because remember, Lincoln was reelected in 1864 and murdered in 1865, which left 1865 to 1868 for Andrew Johnson. And you know, there's your Civil War era. A Civil War era statute. No, I don't even think it said statute. That's probably too big a word. A Civil War era law. Why does the multimillionaire for-profit media not say, you know, not practice the art of word knowing and say a charge arising from the Klan Act of the late 19th century? Because that's where it comes from. And is that too inflammatory for the dainty sensibilities of the suits at NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS? Now, I can understand why they wouldn't say it at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, because if they did, all too many of their viewers would use those push-button chairs to sort of hoist them to a standing position and stand with their hands over the heart and sing Dixie. A Civil War era law. No. A charge made possible by the Klan Act. Say it, everybody! Oh, my God. Well, you know, I have high hopes that they will eventually use that term on maybe My Filthy Morning Habit. Hey, Joe, Mika, he was charged under the Klan Act. He's the son of a Klansman. I don't know, maybe I'm being too sensitive. Yeah, too sensitive. Well, thank you, Steve, in New York. Steve says, Theo's comment, well, hell's bells, give yourself a cowbell. No, what Theo said really got me thinking. I remember the first time that I was the only person in the newsroom, except for my producer at CNN, and we and Iran decided to start shooting at each other in the Persian Gulf. Yeah, the Iranians came paddling out at us in a giant rubber duck floaty. That's not fair. But it is exhilarating when something really momentous happens and one happens to be the person behind the microphone. In a way, Steve in New York, I would prefer that be the answer. The Klan Act, they don't say it on the multimillionaire for-profit media because they're too ignorant. Dear y'all, you may be right. See, it's funny, I'm an old now, but I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm well seasoned for dealing with issues when as a former journalist. When in fact, near retirement age, you know, and everybody who isn't Mrs. Greenspan is. Oh, speaking of Mrs. Greenspan, lo and behold, just as a moment of pure vacuity, Annette and I last night watched the latest Transformers movie because I have a... I've always enjoyed the Transformers movie. They're like the cotton candy of film. And lo and behold, as I was checking the cast list, it's like, I get, okay, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. Christo Fernandez is in it, who played Danny Rojas in Ted Lasso, and he plays one of the Autobots, which is cool. I kept expecting him to say, "Football is live!" But his voice was unmistakable. But I'm scrolling down through the cast, and it's like, so-and-so, 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 you know, Ron Perlman, Peter Dinklage, Leslie Stahl herself. What? Yes, Leslie Stahl doing her star turn in the Transformers movie. Ralphs has been watching, too, and says, from all the articles, no one has yet said who Co-Conspirator 6 is. I guess that was the Easter egg to keep us interested, Ralphs. Okay, maybe Todd was right. Ralph says messages point to identity of co-conspirator 6 in Trump indictment, according to the New York Times. Boris Epstein. Well, Todd, you're going to get a big old cowbell if that turns out to be the case. Bernadette says, co-conspirator number 6. Robin, here's an article from CNN, May 31st, 2022. Perhaps this is why Navarro might be number 6. I, too, would love for it to be that jackass Ginny Thomas, Ginsurrectionist Thomas. So, May 31st, former Trump White House advisor Peter Navarro has been subpoenaed by the Justice Department. First indication the department is acting on the criminal referral from the House of Representatives to hold Donald Trump's one-time trade advisor in contempt of Congress for his refusal to cooperate with the House Select Committee investigating the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The story back references to April when the House voted to recommend Navarro to be referred to the Justice Department on criminal contempt of Congress charges. God, that would be a giant letdown. But again, yesterday CNN was saying, oh no, it's Jason Miller. Steve in New York points out, Epstein is a lawyer. That probably, why would you describe a lawyer as not being a lawyer or as a political consultant? More attorneys getting attorneys. MAGA. But we know because of the... weren't the emails between Ginsurrectionist and Mark Meadows? And aren't those in the possession... Oh, there's so much that's in the possession of Jack Smith and the special counsel team. They've got those email messages where Ginsurrectionist confesses proudly to trying to get Wisconsin electors to adopt the slate of fake electors. I guess at this point all we can do is say, well, you know, we've placed our marker. She deserves to be prosecuted. Not for anything else, but for her participation in not only fomenting January 6th, but in participating in the attempt to overthrow the government. Don't know how long we'll have to wait. Yeah, what, Emilio? I see how it is, Kincaid. Of course, I'm sure you hated the cisformers. Typical. Exactly what you thought. More than meets the eye. Transformers are groomer bots! Well, they were looking for the trans warp key in the movie. That was the mission. I did. I grinned a little bit. But like I said, there's more coming. Darlene's right. There may be more fake elector prosecutions coming. And then there's the star witness, the person who's going to be the star witness in all of this, Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek.
Mother, why didn't you tell me not to take that man's offer? I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy from the heartland of Indiana. Why did I ever associate myself with a con artist from New York City?
Well, he showed up in public in Talibandiana today, Mike Pencilneck Geek did. And to that group, he said,
I don't want to talk about the news of the day.
I don't know why he didn't go ahead and say, and I don't want to be president either.
I'll be lucky if I don't get kicked out of the Rotary Club after this.
But he did issue a statement.
Today's indictment serves as an important reminder. Anyone who puts himself over the Constitution should never be president of the United States. I will have more to say about the government's case after reviewing the indictment.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Mike, can I call you Mike? You're going to have a lot to say, and you're going to do most of it under oath.
The former president is entitled to the presumption of innocence, but with this indictment, his candidacy means more talk about January 6th and more distractions. As Americans, his candidacy means less attention paid to Joe Biden's disastrous economic policies afflicting millions across the United States and to the pattern of corruption with Hunter.
Had to get a Hunter Biden reference in there. I know who co-conspirator number 6 is. Of course. It's Hunter Biden.
Our country is more important than one man. Mother, why did you let me do it?
My Mike Pence impression is rapidly morphing into Don Knotts.
Our Constitution is more important than any one man's career.
Well, yours is over.
On January 6th, former President Trump demanded that I choose between him and the Constitution. I chose the Constitution, and I always will. As your president.
How did whoever was typing this not just break down laughing at that line?
I will not yield an inch in defending America, our people, or our values, and I promise you, if I'm president of the United States, I will have cameras placed in every uterus and every person capable of becoming pregnant in America. We will constantly monitor every woman's menstrual flow. I'm sorry I had to type that word. It gives me the creeps just saying it. I will do so in a way consistent with my oath to the Constitution and the character and decency of the American people. We will restore a threshold of integrity and civility in public life so we can bring real solutions to the challenges plaguing our nation, like how to keep women back in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant where they belong.
God, you can almost hear the tinny whorehouse piano in that, can't you? One of the things that Mike Pencil Neck Geek is promising as president now is that he will, he's going to reduce inflation. He may have to do algebra to do that, because under the Biden administration, inflation has now dropped down to 3%. So, today, he was at the Talibandiana State Fair. No photos yet of him enjoying a corn dog, and more's the pity. He rambled on for about 25 minutes and said,
"Last week, I actually became the first Republican candidate for president to actually lay out a plan for how we tackle inflation."
Can't do nothing.
"And we're going to have a conversation about the real drivers of federal spending. Frankly, it's entitlements. Social Security and Medicare."
You know, anytime a Republican says entitlements, you probably need a bib just to catch any stray drool that's coming out of their off of their fangs.
"We would be a better country if nobody could go to the doctor who wasn't wealthy in the first place. That's what Jesus wants. Did Jesus have socialized medicine? Of course not. If he'd been able to go to the doctor after he'd been on the cross for a while, he might have gotten healed. Then they would have had it do it to him all over again. That's why I love Jesus."
It is prayer meeting Wednesday. So the countdown now is to August the 23rd. The countdown in Fulton County, Georgia, Atlanta, is August 18th. But August 23rd, and it's hard to fathom or stomach this, on August 23rd, the first GOP presidential pageant of the 2024 election cycle will be held. According to the Associated Press, Mike Pencil Neck Geek has a problem. He's met the polling threshold, but has yet to amass a sufficient number of donors, raising the possibility that he might not even qualify for the party's first debate. Oh, I think we all need to send him a nickel just to make sure he's there on stage with Nitwit Nero. Yeah, Ralphs, I mean, it's a fetish object for the entire Republican Party. Oh my God, Pence wants to get rid of Medicare and Social Security. Of course he does. I mean, if it didn't involve a keg, there could probably be some sort of apocryphal story about him sitting next to Eddie Munster Ryan back in the college days, pumping the keg and doing keg stands and talking about how cool it's going to be when Granny can't go to the doctor anymore or eat food. Co-conspirator contestant number six, Bernadette, says, "The problem with Jackass Jenny being number six is technically she didn't officially operate as a consultant to the president." Is that necessarily a condition precedent? You don't have to. She's a political, the person is a political consultant. She is that. The indictment doesn't say to the president, just political consultant. Popak also said, according to Darlene in Connecticut, Boris Epstein is the other possibility for number six, and he's been described as a political operative and Trump's inside fixer, like Michael Cohen was, in addition to being a pettifogger. My word, not Popak's. Our word, Darlene. He was heavily involved with the fake electors scheme and pulling it all together. Maybe, but I just don't want Ginsurrectionists to walk away unscathed. I at least want the schadenfreude joy of knowing that there's some pants shitting going on over at Shea Thomas somewhere in Maryland. know, Steve in New York saying, but her emails. Clearly, co-conspirator number six is Hillary. Oh, maybe that could be a thing for tonight. Who is co-conspirator number six? Wrong answers only. Jeremy tells us Rudy also lost his shit on Newsmuck today and started screaming about Trump's First Amendment rights. He doesn't have a First Amendment right to try to overturn the Constitution, Rudy. This might be a good time to get yourself into a reputable 12-step program. Not to mention Groomers Anonymous. See, that we could spend a program on this. Co-conspirator number six, Steve in New York, says, what about Roger Stone or the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells? What about all the plotting at the Willard Hotel? I think they're simply... This indictment, Jack Smith had to get out there so that the ball could get rolling. But this is going to go on for a while. Yes, of course. New York City!
Mother, why? I should have known better than ever to get involved with anybody from New York City. I'm a good boy.
Okay, you've got us started on tonight's contest. Not contest, but tonight's little game. Emilio says was unindicted co-conspirator number six the sixth person to throw a big brick at Stonewall. Okay. I think Matt and I are jointly awarding you that cowbell, Emilio. Cynthia in the Bay Area says, hey, am I missing something, or shouldn't Bannon be an indicted co-conspirator, too? P.S. I do miss a lot of stuff, but there ain't no fucking Jesus out there to love. That is one thing I'm not missing. Sorry if that pisses anyone off, but I sure get pissed off with Jesus constantly being pushed on me. Well, you're in the right community for that, because... You know, let the wing nuts do all the praying. Did I? See, I don't even have the hiccups right now. Okay, we're streaming. Internet weather, you know. Oh, nice. Jeremy pointing out in that speech, Mike Pencilneck Geek also said, it's time to ban trans people from the military. And the women's. And the trans women's. And the non-binaries. I was waiting for that reference. Pencilneck. Bernadette says, Mike, the potted plant, Pence, wouldn't know the Constitution if it walked up and slapped the fly off his head. I just want the fly to come back. I think the poor thing was stuck in his hairspray. Oh, and over at his rickety, falling-apart, rattle-trap social media site, apparently, according to Ralph's, Geezer Disgustus, Tripe Social, Geezer Disgustus, Triped 55 plus truths last night. He is scared shitless. I think you're right, and of course, just purely for the entertainment value, it was about a half an hour before airtime when this landed in my inbox.
Friend, according to news reports, I will be arranged tomorrow in the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C. There's something deeply troubling about learning details of your own arrangement as your freedom hangs in the balance from leaks from the press. Some outlets indicate that I may even be arrested.
Hashtag STS, y'all.
The swamp that I am on a mission to drain is trying to imprison me for life as an innocent man. I always liked Billy Joel. I am an innocent man. But I'm not afraid in the slightest. This is the mission I signed up for when I first chose to run for president, believe me, as a complete political outsider. When you begin to drain the swamp, you finally catch a glimpse of the vile monsters that had been lurking at the bottom.
I think he's got the wrong verb tense. If they had been lurking at the bottom, they aren't there anymore.
Biden's weaponized Department of Justice is one of those monstrous entities that is tearing our nation to pieces. Crooked Joe does not have the courage to face me in a free and fair election at a time when our country is in serious decline.
Well, I mean, dipshit, I hate to bring it up again, but he did face you in a free and fair in a free and fair election, and well, he whipped your ass.
He's cravenly weaponized the DOJ to try and put me in jail as a last-ditch effort to stay in power as the least popular president in history.
Oh, that was you, dipshit.
There's no other way to say it. Our nation is teetering on the brink of tranny. And at this moment, I am reminded of the words of our drag queen founding fathers, who said that America would be a republic so long as you can keep it. We will soon find out if we can keep it. If you're doing poorly due to the monstrous figures entrenched in the Washington swamp, then please stop reading here. I only wanted to keep you updated on my reported arrangement tomorrow. Otherwise, I ask that you peacefully stand by my side now more than ever. Please make a contribution to save America from forever collapsing into a tranny for 1,500% impact. Contribute $24, contribute $47, contribute $75, contribute $100, contribute $250. Omaha hike.
He's never going to stop running the grift. He will be grifting at the very instant where he breathes out and does not breathe in again. No. That's my Trump character, Ralphs.
Arranged.
That's probably how he dictates it, but somebody else knows to type arraigned. A former aide to Mike Pencil, Net Geek, showed up on CNN today and dared his former boss, or actually dared Nitwit Nero, threw down the gauntlet. Mark Short. Told CNN. He's eager to hear the claims.
Said he would have to publicly criticize him. Upon learning of this, Pence's chief of staff, Mark Short, alerted the head of the vice president's Secret Service detail because he was concerned for his safety. Mark Short joins us now. Mark, based on your read of the indictment and your sense of where the former vice president is on this, do you believe there's clear evidence of criminality?
You know, it's hard for me to know whether there's criminality, honestly, Phil. I think that what the president did was wrong. I think we've been outspoken about that. I think that one of the biggest shifts that I think we've seen, though, in the last 24 hours, that if you just pull back for a second, I think is pretty tremendous, which is that for 2.5 years, I think the president and his team argued that, look, the election was stolen, it was fraudulent, and if I only had my chance to present my evidence, like the courts rejected the chance to do that, the Congress rejected the chance to share my evidence. Well, If he has the evidence, then all these conspiracy charges would go away. But that's not the case that you hear his defense team presenting. Instead, what they're saying is he has a First Amendment right, which is in essence saying all elected officials lie. Are you going to charge everybody? Which is, I think, a dramatic shift to say, look, it was stolen. I never had a chance to present my evidence, to now saying, look, yeah, maybe Mike Pence was right. And it really, you know, it I don't know that it was stolen, but I have a right to tell the American people misrepresentations, which I think is a dramatic change in what they've been saying publicly in the last 24 hours.
He's not wrong. I think he's still very obviously in his boss's camp. But some people will figure out that part of this process is trying to disentangle the Republican Party from Trump's pernicious influence, which the maggots seem disinclined to, well, to tolerate. Oh, and I know it's not quite as dramatic as yesterday, but we have some more January 6th news today. A guy that noted testicle toaster Tuckio Rose Carlson, accused of being a federal agent in 2021, is now under indictment for what he did during the terrorist attack of January 6th. The DOJ announced the arrest of Daniel Donnelly Jr. of St. Louis, Missouri. He had previously bragged about leading a gang of insurrectionists to basically charge police officers outside the Capitol. The indictment quotes a video that Donnelly put out saying, "I took up a lot of space, and I had the rioter shield, and I was right up there, and for some reason, like, the other people up there on the front lines with me, they did something similar. It's like they followed my lead, kind of, and it turned out to be a great strategy because the whole crowd was doing that, was able to push further than we had gotten the whole time, the entire time." So, naturally, testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson says, "I was clearly a law enforcement officer." And he said this with some idiot on the air with him at the time. Testicle toasting Tuckio Rose going on and saying, "If I'm wrong, so be it, bro." Well, suffice to say, Daniel Donnelly Jr. of St. Louis was not an undercover federal agent. And he's now facing charges of attempting to obstruct law enforcement officers, charged with stealing government property. Oh, he's a thief. Attempting to obstruct an official government proceeding and engaging in disorderly conduct on the Capitol grounds. He's a fad. And, you know, I guess these idiots who persist in claiming that these were peaceful protesters, you know, despite all the damning video evidence to the contrary, they're not going to stop. Steve in New York says, "It strikes me that the defense is in essence, I didn't lie, but if I did, it was my First Amendment right to do so. Heads I win, tails you lose." That's what they're going to try. And I can't imagine it's going to work. And by the way, As Jeremy pointed out, the judge in the January 6th indictments is the same judge who admonished the QAnon shaman freak and told him, "Oh yeah, you do deserve jail time." Let's take a sec here, and then I will go to the stress line. It's tuber time on the horn. A columnist named Kyle Whitmire down in Alabama, you know, there are some people who are not maggots in Alabama. I happen to be dear friends with one of them. Several of them, as a matter of fact. But Kyle Whitmire is no maggot. And in a column that was published yesterday, the headline reads, "Whitmire, Tommy Tuberville leaves Alabama lost in space." Because they are still so absolutely hopping mad over the fact that they're not going to get Space Command in the Rocket City. Don't blame Tommy Tuberville for losing Space Command. Blame Kay Ivey. That's Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw. As Alabama governor, she's supposed to be our state's first best champion. Don't blame Tommy Tuberville for losing Space Command. Blame Tommy Battle. As Huntsville mayor, he's supposed to look out for the interests of his city. Don't blame Tommy Tuberville for losing Space Command. Blame Katie Britt. Coach isn't Alabama's only U.S. senator. And then this. I mean, this is some classic "I come not to praise Caesar, but to bury him" stuff. Good on you, Kyle. Tuberville's manipulation of Senate rules to stonewall military promotions isn't a novel, genius political tactic. He's a toddler who found a pistol on the nightstand. And when the gun goes off and somebody gets hurt, it's not the kid that's to blame. It's the grown-ups who didn't do anything to stop it from happening in the first place. Alabama is short of responsible grown-ups willing to stop Tuberville, so now it's time to hold some of these grown-ups responsible. Want to know who they are? Look around at who's trying to blame somebody else. Ivy, Britt, every member of our congressional delegation, including the lone Democrat, Terry Sewell, shook their fingers and clucked their tongues at the president. Fine. But what else did they expect? Of course, President Biden had every incentive to put Space Command in Colorado. As Birmingham Mayor Richard Arrington once said after he was accused of giving business to his friends, "Who am I supposed to give it to? My enemies?" The time for sanctimony has passed. Bluster and bravado are worthless. "This fight is far from over," U.S. Representative Mike Rogers, R. Sachs, tweeted. It's over. If Alabama were a two-party state, and I don't know if Kyle Whitmire, when he typed that, thought, I don't know why I'm going to continue this. If Alabama were a two-party state, that would be fine. Democrats would savage Republicans for their failure, and balance would be restored. There would be billboards at the gates of every Alabama military base saying, "We wouldn't hurt you like this." But not here. Alabama Democrats can't run a Twitter account, much less an effective messaging strategy. They're too busy fighting with each other to keep Republicans honest. And what's the result? Well, that might be the saddest thing of all. Hidden in plain view is a clear indication of how leaderless and desperate Alabama has become. After decades of bribing auto manufacturers with tax breaks and cheap labor, some of it children, what do we have left when it comes to economic recruitment? Our strategy for economic growth was having the President of the United States order people to move to Alabama no matter if they wanted to or not. Kyle Whitmire is good. Get much more desperate than that and you'll trigger an Amber Alert. And then this. We elected a day-trading, Florida-living, mediocre football coach to the U.S. Senate. The blame lands where the responsibility always was. We put a toddler in the room with a loose gun, and now we caught a bullet in the groin. This one's on us. I wish Kyle Whitmire's words could be heard by every Alabama voter who has cast a vote for a Republican in, say, the last 50 years. Because it's the truth. Space Command, as I recall, that's where NORAD is. Makes sense to me. Well, where it is Colorado Springs, almost adjacent to the United States Air Force Academy, which is where the commissioned officer graduate for Space Command, the Guardians, Space Ghost, come from. I don't know why the Cleveland baseball team didn't sue. Oh, thank you, Billable. Cowbells for you last night. Robin, you said the following gems last night toward the end of the program, for which you haven't yet received cowbells. Bill Barr heard his law license calling and fled the scene. And cabinet-level cowardice, referring to Elaine Chao and other cabinet officials who waited till January 7th, 2021 to resign. Thank you, Billable. That's just good for my soul. Thank you. Oh, dear. Is this a... Wait a minute. Let me get to the right platform. This looks delightful. Giuliani screams on Newsmax about Trump indictment. Oh, we have to hear this. Yeah, Kyle Whitmire is part of AL.com, and that's the primary Alabama news outlet, so he probably reaches more people than a lot of others, routes. Here we go.
The right of free speech of an American citizen, never mind whether he was president or not. It could be anybody. It could be a homeless person. You don't get to violate people's First Amendment rights, Smith, no matter who the hell you are or no matter how sick you are with Trump derangement syndrome.
And this is co-conspirator number one.
Like an unethical lawyer. It should be the last.
Well,
that
was performative.
When you see that. I mean, that encapsulates just some of the reaction that we've heard from those supporting Donald Trump. What's your reaction to that?
I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I don't think the First Amendment covers, you know, inviting tens of thousands of people to D.C. to be your foot soldiers and then telling them you have to fight for your country, knowing that they're armed, sending them to the Capitol, and knowing what they are capable of, what's on their minds and in their hearts. That's an insurrection. That's not protected by the First Amendment.
Well, Daniel Hodges, a D.C. Metro police officer, he got crushed in a doorway during the domestic terror attack of January 6, 21. Is not wrong. He's right. And if you recall, there was Secret Service and radio traffic. We got a maggot up a tree over here, and he appears to have an AR-15. Should we do anything about it?
Yeah, not unless he starts shooting or something.
And meanwhile, I know people in my little community who are still posting memes. I saw one today of Joe Biden standing next to a classic Corvette with the top down saying,
Jill, I lost my keys again. I locked myself out of the car again.
They're not even living in the same reality as we. All right, so we have reached, here endeth the filibuster of sorts, and we've reached the beginning of the second hour of this prayer meeting Wednesday. I got Jerry Falwell Jr. news, and, well, you know, we just kind of, I hope there's time to get to it, because maybe we'll save it for one of those happy news kickers like the professional broadcasters at Busted Knuckle Eyewitness Team Action News 73 like to do. But for now, let's run over to the stress line, see who's been patiently waiting on hold. Hey, welcome to the program.
To hell with Jerry Falwell.
Oh, come on. You're no fun.
I like the word combination, schadenfreude of joy. I like that. I like that, and you should get a cowbell for that.
Well, thank you.
And I've got news.
Yes?
I've got news. Jinjin went to law school, doo-dah, doo-dah. Jinjin went to Crichton Law School, oh, doo-dah day, and graduated in 1983.
You have a lovely singing voice. Now, I never had any idea, Darlene.
Oh, well, thank you.
Were you part of the law school Order of the Coif chorus?
No, but in, you know, grammar school, high school, plays, singing, blah, blah, blah. I'm an alto, but I struggled with soprano because I can't hear myself. But everybody said, you sound really good as a soprano. I said, I can't hear myself. I sound all up in my ears and my head. I cannot hear myself. They're like, don't worry, you're good. I'm like, are you kidding? Okay. But I'm naturally an alto.
Well, Joy in Ann Arbor is going to hear this podcast, and she's going to say, oh, another singer. Hi, Joy.
Joyful noise. Joyful noise. I love that. Yeah, so Crichton, a Jesuit school, Crichton University School of Law, bitch graduated in 1983. Now, the particular article I read did not indicate that she took the bar and passed it, but if you do like a Google search, is she a lawyer? Something does pop up and say, and that says she's an American lawyer. So I don't know if that is accurate or if it's a Jim Jackadoff Jordan thing where, you know, they went to law school, but they're masquerading as lawyers because they never took the bar. So if somebody in the horn listening audience can kind of confirm that, it'd be great. But, you know, her prospects are looking a lot better here because, you know, these were all lawyers that he was targeting as the six co-conspirator, well, the five of the six co-conspirators. So naming her a political consultant, you know, everything says she's a political operative who cut her teeth there in the Chamber of Commerce. And mommy was a political operative and she wanted to be like mommy. So, if she did pass the bar, take the bar, pass the bar, then she's falling within that group of lawyers that he's calling the six co-conspirators, but that's obviously not her main career, primary career. But even then, she still went to law school and, you know, he identified her as a political consultant, which is her primary thing. So, I think she's still in the running. If you're right, then I agree this would just be unbelievable, because if you think about it, Jack Smith has to run everything by Merrick Garland first. Has to present it, I guess, like in a report, and then Merrick says yay or nay. I'm assuming he has line item veto on certain things. But if it is her, then her role must have been so embedded, so dastardly, so criminal that Merrick Garland could not overlook it. Because I don't see Merrick Garland wanting to take on that kind of a beast, considering who her husband is and the whole separation of powers and blah, blah, blah. So if you are right, that's just going to blow to the top. That's just going to blow the top off the whole thing.
Darlene, I want to be cognizant, though, of the risk I'm running of sounding like, oh, God, I can't even stand to let this come out of my mouth. Charlie Kirk the other day talking about the damning evidence to be delivered from, oh, what was his name? Devin Archer. I mean, right. To have heard Charlie Kirk in that clip. I'm wishful. I want it to be Jin.
Well, so do I. I think everybody who's listening to your program, minus Maggot, want it to be her.
Hey, you miserable fox. Just in case there are any maggots.
And in keeping with, you know, whether it's Jack Smith or, you know, well, I mean, Ken Starr is the late, you know, hope it doesn't hurt you little with the pineapples up the ass, Ken. Or Mueller, all, you know, any of these special counsels, independent counsels, you know,
right.
Ken Starr. But clearly, certainly with Jack Smith, and I would have to say with Mueller as well, but with Jack Smith, every word means something.
Well, that's what I was trying to get across yesterday talking to Todd.
Right.
Every sentence in that indictment has some element of testimonial proof behind it.
And full disclosure, I have not yet had the opportunity to read that indictment, which I will do. I read the first one, you know, for the Mar-a-Lago mess, but I'm writing my first grant for my new client in North Carolina, so that is all consuming until I get getting my feet wet, baptism by fire, and basically my eyeballs are like unseen double right now because I've been staring at a computer.
Burning a little bit, are they?
Oh, more than that, yeah. Because I have an issue with my computer glass is busted for the third time, fourth time. So, yeah, they were a horrible set of frames, and I kept getting them replaced. They just kept breaking. But they just snap, you know. It's just a horrible set of frames. And, you know, if I stare at a computer screen for too long with my progressive lenses, or I try to stare at the computer screen without my glasses at all, my left eye, can't remember what it's called, but the pupil starts to drift to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very subtle, but I can see it looking in the mirror, and I wind up developing double vision, and it takes me quite a while for that to correct. So I have to sit outside and stare, and at like the beautiful greenery, and wait for it to wait for my vision to get back to normal. And because I can't drive, I can't get to the my doc, you know. Anyway, so I haven't been able to read it because I'm so consumed, but I know that looking at the first indictment or series of indictments that the first complaint with all the indictments for the Mar-a-Lago thing, he's very precise. He and his team are very precise. So every word that's in there is not going to be there without a reason. So I agree for him to say or to write political consultant, that means something. That means something. Because, I mean, even Popoc was saying political operative, which is different. I mean, that's slightly different than political consultant. But, If she is in fact number six, then what she did was far worse than what Peter Navarro did, or Boris Epstein did. And for Merrick Garland to say, yeah, go for it. It must have been pretty bad because
Hold on a minute, Darlene. Does Merrick Garland have yay and nay? I mean, that's why there's a special counsel.
He does. No, but my understanding is that the special counsel is not an independent counsel, but he's more or less been like an independent counsel. But my understanding is he does in fact have to present what he intends to do to Merrick Garland, and Merrick Garland has to sign off on it and say, yeah, okay, go for it. That's at least what Midas Touch and the attorneys there have been saying. Ben, myself, and Popok, and I listen to them pretty much every day to get the legal thing because I think there's a need for that to really explain the legal stuff in depth. And that when there's quiet, usually when there's that little quiet period after the grand jury is met and it's quiet, nothing happens for a few days or maybe a week. The assumption is that's when Jack Smith is presenting his intention, well, his plans, what he's going to do to Merrick Garland. And that Merrick has to say, all right, yeah, go for it. So on the one hand, I agree with Todd. Merrick Garland took too long to set this whole thing in motion. On the other hand, you know, I agree with Steve from New York with caveats in the sense that Merrick Garland's pretty much been giving him free rein, letting him do what he needs to do. But the caveat is we really don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We really don't know, you know, what Merrick Garland might be doing a line item veto to in terms of what Jack Smith is doing. But the sense I'm getting is that Merrick Garland is giving him a lot of latitude. But I think Merrick Garland would, like, if it was a tenuous connection with her, if it was tenuous, I think he would say, keep her off. Don't bother with her, because of the fact of who her husband is and the separation of powers and all of those issues, and just how Republicans are going to scream to the nines. So if you're correct, and he said, yeah, go for it, it must have been pretty bad what she did. And it could also potentially explain why the January 6th committee didn't touch it. In a sense, it saves face for Liz Cheney, because you said she's friends with Jen there.
Mm-hmm. Buddies.
And the January 6th, good buddies. So, because there's a black hole of information, or you know what I mean? It's like, I don't understand why no one seems to know why they didn't include her, why they didn't quote-unquote refer her, why, you know, I don't even think any of the legacy media, the for-profit media, have bothered to ask Jamie Raskin, why didn't you refer Jenny Thomas? She testified before you in private, you know, but it leaked out, or they said that she still believes to this day that the election was stolen.
Well, that's easily explained, Darlene, by virtue of the fact that she's a loon.
And she has a cult mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if they saw this as such a hot potato, and that in order to give Liz Cheney an out, they just said, Let the DOJ decide what to do with Jinjin. And they may have seen just how bad it was, like her involvement was. and that, again, they're staying in their lane. The January 6th committee, in terms of incurring ridicule because, oh, you know, she's the wife of a Supreme Court justice and separation of powers bullshit, which you're going to scream and cry anyway, if you're right. But if that's true, then the fact that Merrick Garland said, yeah, go for it, because I don't see him as being that gutsy, unless it's pretty bad. You know, and to go after the
I'm not speculating, Darlene, because, and I don't mean that as a pushback. I'm just basing what I'm saying on the fact that since we're dealing with the false electors fraud,
yeah,
that by her own admission, she participated in it on Donald Trump's behalf.
Well, she did. Yes, I mean she did, for sure.
And you can't.
Right.
Well, you would have to have more than her emails, but you know that's what Mark Meadows is for.
Oh yes, and we know she was communicating quite regularly and forcefully with him. You know, trying to pressure him. So, if you're right, this is what I think, invite Trump to make a, you know, try to get it to the Supreme Court. This could create another constitutional crisis, because they are so brazen, they are so full of themselves, they know no one can do anything against them, the six justices, the six CSS. I would not put it past Clarence Thomas to not recuse himself. So, should be interesting.
To say the least.
And we'll see what happens. I mean, I everybody's wondering who that sixth person is. So no one really knows. I mean, everybody's guessing. But no one has said or suggested what you did or what you have.
Well, actually, apparently someone is. Ralph's just sent along a link. Newsweek, which lately has become a dumpster fire.
Yeah, lately? Okay.
But Dara Roche writes, speculation is growing that Virginia Ginny Thomas is one of the alleged co-conspirators cited, yada, yada, yada.
Okay, all right. When was this posted? Today?
Where is the date? This morning at 4:54 a.m.
Good catch, Ralph.
Co-conspirator 6 has proven more difficult to identify, and some social media users speculated that it could be Ginny Thomas, a conservative activist, and yada yada.
Maybe Newsweek is listening to you.
And again, this is the sketchy language. A political consultant who helped implement a plan to submit fraudulent slates of presidential electors to obstruct the certification proceeding. What part of that is not her? Within the body of the indictment. Apparently, co-conspirator 6 sent an email to co-conspirator 1 that provided a list of lawyers in 6 swing states who would assist in a plan involving phony electors. Who would be in better position to know who those 6 lawyers are than somebody who is up to her eyebrows in right-wing nutbaggery?
Well,
which she is, who has connections to the Heritage Foundation, to Leonard, to Lee Lee.
Oh, that little fat turd. Oh, yeah. Well, if the grand jury can, you know, reconvene, and she is caught walking into the courthouse, then she clearly got a target letter and is like, I better start talking.
On the other hand, here's a name we haven't mentioned, Darlene.
Because
let's see, TV producer Jonathan Goldman said co-conspirator 6 is a weird way to spell Jenny Thomas. But then he also said, yeah, that cowbell for Jonathan Goldman. But he also suggested it could be Stephen Miller. It could be Roger Stone. It could be Stevie Three Shirts, this is a long shot that I might run to the betting parlor for, Mr. Meth Pillow.
He's a lawyer?
Doesn't say they're a lawyer. Co-conspirator 6 is not described as a lawyer.
I know, but again, like, I feel like it's the lawyer that he's going after because they should have known better.
I didn't get that sense from reading the indictment. He's going after the people who were primarily responsible from, you know, Giuliani
primarily
is easy.
Involved. Okay.
You know, Squidney Powell is easy.
Yeah.
John Eastman is easy. Jeffrey Clark is easy, and so is Joe Crowder, Joe Chowderhead, or said, Kenneth Cheesebro.
Right, Cheesebro. Now, were all of these individuals at that famous meeting that, the hell is his name? The other attorney who fessed up walked in on and looked at the dude that was used to be the former owner of the a furniture place. And said, so who are you?
Another guy over on Twitter, yeah. Over on Scum, that's what we're calling what used to be Twitter now. Co-conspirator number 6 had access to senators and House members' phone numbers and confirmed them for Rudy Giuliani. Jenny Thomas had access to their numbers. She was texting everybody. She also calls herself a political consultant, as the indictment describes number 6. Flipping her could be a pathway to prosecuting the members of Congress who were involved with the coup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then former member of the House, Denver Riggleman, said, it's not Jenny.
But she was not there at that meeting that occurred, the one that just blew up, where Sidney Powell, like, the claim was that Trump was going to make Sidney Powell, like, attorney general or something like that. She was not physically at that meeting, and it seems like a lot of the characters on that roster of 6 were at that meeting. Am I right about that? Maybe I'm mixing up things. But
no, I don't think you're wrong. Here's another thought on eliminating Peter Navarro or Mark Meadows from membership in co-conspirator number 6.
Okay.
Jeffrey Clark is identified as a Department of Justice employee.
Right.
Now, Mark Meadows would have to have been identified as a member of the White House staff. So too with Peter Navarro.
Right. Okay.
And she was up to her eyeballs in the Arizona conspiracy.
Right.
and I think also Wisconsin. And Arizona plays a big part in the body of the indictment.
No, the Wisconsin one, that's where Dana, or the lady there, the attorney general, is going after the 11 or 12.
That's Michigan, where Dana Nessel is
okay, that's laying Michigan. About her. She wasn't necessarily involved in Michigan. Which, by the way, you know, she is in Ginny Thomas. Was Ginny Thomas involved with Michigan? The Michigan fake electors scheme?
I recall Wisconsin and Arizona.
Okay. Well, Dana Nessel, I think her name is, right?
Yeah, Dana Nessel in Michigan.
The attorney general there. She, again, this is a demerit. As far as I'm concerned, against Merrick Garland, but she sent that, she referred that to the DOJ ages ago and asked them to look into this and prosecute those fake electors. They did nothing. And that's when she decided to take matters into her own hands and keep it, you know, within the state and go after them for the, their scheme.
Oh, and by the way, you got a note from Chris in Oregon. Christopher said, "Hey, Darlene, Ken Starr, Russia's pineapple partner in crime. Hey, Darlene, thank you for invoking the name of Ken Starr, getting his justly desserts. That made my day."
You're welcome.
I'm concerned, Christopher continues, about Buddy the Beefalo in Florida. We know he's one of the most woke creatures of the animal kingdom. It's hot as fuck down there. Is someone keeping Buddy nice and cool? Scary Jerry, can you please check on him for us?
Oh, Buddy.
And I'm
sure they're cooling him down.
I hope so. Buddy deserves the very best.
Yes, they do, because, you know, Buddy's trans. Buddy's basically part cow.
It's true.
I don't know if you remember that from the story. And
maybe they're interbovine.
Well, yeah, and people got all upset, and they were like getting angry at the place there in Florida that took them in. They said, "Well, this is just a fact, and we're shutting down this Facebook thread on this because people are getting rude and they're acting inappropriately." For Christ's sake, it's just an animal. People are like, "No, it's Buddy the Beefalo. It's a guy. It's male. It's not part cow." Anyway, I hope Buddy's doing smashingly because...
And lives a long and happy life.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, they've got a lot of gal pals. So, you know, I'm sure that everybody's having fun down there.
Well, I have to mention that Lou has been sleuthing and doing a deep dive into the world that is Ginsurrectionist Thomas.
Oh, God.
She was a law student, so we have some details here. She was a law student. She flunked the bar exam, the state bar exam in Nebraska, and she sort of fell in with a self-help, sort of self-actualization kind of cult called LifeSpring in Washington, where members got into ritual humiliation of each other. They'd strip down out of their... You know, it's always this way with these freaks. I mean, you know, there's Fappy with the barbed wire around his leg and Fat Dead Tony whipping himself with a self-flagellation. They're a bunch of... The Federalist Society might as well be the fucking Hellfire Club, okay? So they'd strip out of their clothes and then mock each other's body fat. Lou says it sounded kind of grim and scary. But anyway, she was then deprogrammed, got out of it, became anti-cult. But that was a phase of her life before she met Fappy. There are a lot more smears in the piece that Kevin is reading, the most snarky of which may be that Ginny Thomas failed to pass the bar exam. The author doesn't mention that Ginny passed it on her second try. many others that have failed on the first and passed on the second try, including
I did.
Hillary and Kamala and Michelle.
I do, too.
And then
I missed by 3 points.
I remember standing smoking outside on a break at the bar exam, looking at a buddy of mine who looked at it. We were taking it in July, and he looked at me and said, "You know, I hate Charleston, West Virginia in February. It's going to suck so much to be back here taking this damn thing." Because there was nobody walking around. There never is at a bar exam. There's nobody walking around going, "Oh, I got this one."
No, you're usually cramming for that half hour between the multi-state tests and the essays.
And I don't know how. I remember waiting for the mail to come, and it's just like, okay, yeah, ain't gotta take it again in February. Son of a bitch! It turned out that I scored so high on the fucking multi-states that it didn't grade my essays. Which is a good thing.
That's good. I mean, I was too fucked up the first time. I was way too... First of all, I have a very strong belief, adverse belief, that I cannot take multiple... I can't take those standardized tests. And to me, in my own brain, at 25, I was thinking, oh, you know, this is the ultimate standardized test, so I'm going to fail. And I was too wound up, too freaked out. I took the Kaplan? It was the, what is it, Barrister one and the Kaplan one. There were two different courses. I can't remember where it began with a B. I think it's the Kaplan one, and I was absorbing everybody else's
I think I took Barbary.
That's it, Barbary. It was Barbary and Kaplan. I may have taken Barbary. They had the big red books, the big red ones. They were like legal.
Mine were blue.
Mine was red. So I think it was Barbary, but or Connecticut. So I was wigged out. I was not centered. I was not focused. My mother contacted me because I was up in Springfield, Mass, studying where I was living because I went to law school there. And I think my mother was so worried. When she got off the phone with me, she asked my dad to call me. So my dad called me, and just talking to me for a few minutes, he's like, "Darlene, you know, how many cups of coffee are you drinking a day?" And I said, "3 pots." And then at night, before I went to bed, I'd have Coca-Cola. So I couldn't sleep. And I'm like,
imagine
I can't
that.
Sleep. Because, and I thought, I mean, it's because I'm anxiety ridden. No, it was because I was kept up on caffeine.
Yeah, you were wasted on caffeine, yeah.
I was wasted on caffeine and anxiety. And so when I flunked the bar by just 3 points, I was like, yes. Fucking A, that's awesome. Because I'm so... I knew right there. I was like, I am so fucked up. Yeah, I only missed my 3 points. If I can keep it under control, I'm going to ace it the next time.
And you did.
That was my reason. And I did. Because what I decided to do, like a friend of mine at the time, she's like, "You know what? You're a solitary studier. You've been absorbing everybody else's anxiety. You just... go off on your own and prepare on your own." So they didn't offer it again for another 6 months. So I figured I'm going to take it right away. I'm not going to let time pass because the law shifts and changes. And I want to be sure. I use the same book. I studied on my own, busted my ass. I went to the library every week and took a practice test on the multi-state, blah, blah, blah. And in between, my friend, the same friend, said, "I think they're going to give you an essay on taxation. I said, "Oh, shit, I haven't studied anything on taxation." So in between the multi-state and the essay portion, I sat in my car in a parking garage in New Haven where it was me, where we were taking a bar. And I crammed taxes. I crammed tax law for that, you know, munching on it and just munching and cramming on tax law.
Good times. And see, and we got to remember this was all in the era before coffee was even good.
Yeah, this was in the.
There were no mocha choca bullshits back then.
Early 90s.
Yeah, I took mine in the summer of 91.
Well, accepted or inducted into the state and federal bars in 91. I think it was June 91. But I crammed a tax law in 30 minutes. Sure enough, there was an essay on tax law. So I BS'd enough to get through and pass the bar. So it was just because I was too wound up and I psyched myself out.
Yeah. Welcome everyone to law school trauma sharing with Robin and Darlene. We'll be...
All right. And it took me forever.
I hope David in Oregon's listening and is taking joy in this. We're still.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he will do fine. He will do fine.
Yeah. So
I was psyched out.
40 years later, we're still traumatized.
Exactly, because you don't need it again. The way you have to think in order to pass the bar, you don't need it again. You know, it's not the right answer. It's the best answer on a multi-state. I mean, I knew someone who's freaking brilliant. She got the highest score ever at that time on a multi-state of any Yale law school graduate. She got almost a perfect 200.
She's a barista now, right? Not practicing law?
Probably not. No, she wanted to. Her husband was a clerk. Clerked for, I want to say Justice Brennan. Not Brennan. I think it might be Brennan or Warren. Maybe it was Justice Warren. He's conservative, so maybe it was Warren. He was a law clerk for one of the Supreme Court justices that are long gone. I don't think it's Brennan. I think it's Warren. And she made her first million on the stock market. And so she wanted to take her legal acumen and create like a totally new position on Wall Street somewhere. Fucking brilliant. Yeah. And would take me out to lunch in her Mercedes. And I was like this gobsmacked acolyte that just thought she was the most amazing thing ever.
Darlene, the wide-eyed country mouse in the Mercedes-Benz General Staff Auto.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, this would be the first and last Friday. Only time I'll ever be a Mercedes. You know, and I think she just liked the adoration because I was just this like, starry-eyed, like, oh, my God, this person is amazing. And I was working for a legal services organization, which is just surprising that she decided to kind of help the poor for a while.
Went slumming, did she? Went slumming, did she?
Yeah, I mean, she was funny because there were times where she'd slam the phone down and I'd be like, what's going on? She goes, I'm pissed off at my husband. He did something with taxes I'm not happy about. Boom. And then she also, she was hilarious. She said, when I gave birth to my son, I cried. I said, oh, really? Why? She goes, I can't believe I gave birth to this to a boy.
Oh.
It was fucking hilarious. So, yeah, she was funny.
You had a different experience. Me and the little crowd I ran with were a bunch of smartasses. And... we had the dean of our law school used to brag all the time about how he had been a member of the commission that had been impaneled to rewrite the code of lawyer ethics in the state of Michigan. And my buddy and I were studying one night, and that means drinking beer. We had been talking about him. And I think my buddy said something like, God, if he says one more thing about the Michigan Commission. And I said, Michigan Commission? Michigan Commission. You take your pleadings to the courthouse about 7:45. Forgot about the statute, find you filed too late. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na. bar proceedings, here you come. So we wrote an entire song and used to perform it at parties together, the Michigan Commission, done to the tune of Chattanooga Choo Choo. Good times.
That's cute. Yeah, I mean, there's some good memories. I'm glad I'm out of it, though. I wasn't meant to do law. And, of course, once you get out of it, you're mind, you forget everything. At least I do.
Well, no, so honestly, no. Some of the trauma remains, Darlene. All you have to do is say rule against perpetuities, and I get a tick in my cheek.
Well, okay, don't. Okay.
All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it.
Yeah. I mean, and I was all over the map. Like, I was brilliant with criminal law and criminal procedure and SEC law. I was really good at that. I was good at, intellectual property. When it came to civil procedure, Property law is my worst.
I hated wills and estates. I despised tax so much that I deliberately failed it. I was good with torts. I was good with workers' comp. I was good with criminal procedure. I was good with evidence, and I loved legal history.
Because I wish they had legal history. I don't think they offered that in my school, but to a certain degree, legal history kind of permeated throughout all of the cases we were reading.
And my seminar was taught by a noted scholar, and we, because it just sounded good. I mean, what English major in law school would not take a seminar class called Law and Literature?
Oh, yeah.
We read Bleak House. And I have never regretted signing up for a class so much in my entire life as learning about Jarndyce versus Jarndyce, courtesy of Charles Dickens, who was getting paid by the letter, not the word, the letter.
Wow. Well, I did a C level in family law, which I was really shocked. When I got my grade, I was like really surprised that I didn't do better. So that really threw me. I missed law review by not that much, actually, if I think about it, because I scored so well in criminal law and criminal procedure. But what really dragged me down was property. I think I just didn't have any steam left. To read it, and I really didn't put much effort into it, and I barely passed. I think I got a D. And I just, that dragged everything else down. But I was like, I would show sparks of brilliance in certain areas of law and other areas I just tanked. And I really, you know, the only reason I went to law school was because my dad insisted, you know, you become a doctor or you become a lawyer. And if you do that, I will pay for your entire education. And I'm a little kid, I'm young kid, I mean, basically. And my mother was pissed because my dad didn't say that to my mother, like, didn't tell her. So my mother was really angry. So there was, you know, anger at me, even though I'm just in the middle and I'm doing what my father is telling me to do. And he kept his promise. So doing what I really wanted to do, which was, you know, do something with writing, didn't even factor in. I think the only time I actually said, oh, what would I really love to do is when I was in high school. And for a brief time, I'd love to be a paleontologist. And then when I read, you know, the working conditions in the hot, dry sands of wherever, I'm like, ooh, I don't think I want to do that. And then my dad's like, you need to become a doctor. You know, it's a middle class solution. become a doctor or lawyer and you'll be set for life, that kind of thing. Even though, you know, loving what you do is just as, is more important. But that just didn't factor in. So I didn't last very long because also the muscular dystrophy was kicking in and I was struggling to navigate through an antiquated courthouse in my local area that, you know, didn't have, it wasn't very accessible. The courtrooms were up on the second floor and I was struggling, you know, and I was much younger, so. And I don't recall having problems climbing stairs when I was in law school, but the moment I got out of law school, things started to deteriorate, and I thought, oh, it's bad knees, it's this, you know, but, you know, women, we have to wear the, at least back then, you know, the form-fitting lawyer costumes and, you know, skirts and the blazer, you know, matching the lawyer suit, and you're wearing heels and, you know, trying to climb a flight of stairs with a briefcase and heavy books. And, you know, I was struggling. I was struggling. And I remember as I was quitting law and saying, I want to go into grant writing because I was so miserable and wasn't making any money at it. I was meant to do something else. I remember I had to go in and ask the judges to allow me to be, you know, to essentially hand the cases over to other attorneys. My biggest fear was, how the hell am I going to get into this courthouse? And when I saw that they put a railing up, I was so relieved. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God, yes.
I'm golden. I got this. And I didn't care at that point. I didn't care what, you know, there was a judge that I knew, used to come into my dad's shop and he's like, hey, come over here, darling. You know, you know, he's on the bench running a sidebar with me, and I'm not even involved in the case, but I had certain connections within the legal field, within the legal community there, but I was ready to leave. So anyway, I'm getting off topic, but who was the listener that was doing the deep dive into?
Oh, that was Lou, and I want to go back to it because he has another nominee.
Thanks, Lou.
Lou has another nominee. Okay. Based on the description in the indictment, number six was also tasked to check the phone numbers for senators further down in the indictment. I think they're saying it might have been someone working with or an aide to Rudy. And Lou concludes Bernie Kerik.
Okay.
But wouldn't Bernie Kerik be identified instead of a political consultant? Wouldn't Bernie Kerik be identified as a media figure? Because
I don't know who that person is. But
former New York police commissioner. Probably. Total perv, sleazebag.
Oh.
On Fox a lot. Mm. Oh, by the way, Steve in New York enjoyed mocha choca bullshit. And said, my bar exam was very different. We had 100 New York multiple choice short answers and essays. And then we took the multi-state. I'm so glad they put the multi-state first, and Steve added, my first day in law school was remedies, which was the first class I stopped attending. I get that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the time that I was taking it, John F. Kennedy Jr. was still alive. He was, you know, young. He kept flunking the bar. That didn't help my mind frame either, because John F. Kennedy Jr. kept flunking. He kept flunking the bar repeatedly. And so he had, I think, New York. Yeah, it was New York. Only at that time, I don't know if it's still the case, but New York allowed a 3 strikes and then you're out. He was on his 3rd strike. He was on his 3rd exam. So apparently he decided to take Connecticut, Massachusetts, as well as New York, to improve his chances that he'd at least pass one of them. And there was a possibility that he could have been in the room that I was in for the Connecticut multi-state. I didn't see him. I didn't see anybody. I mean, it was a few, you know, it was probably about 200 people in that room. It was a big, big base in New Haven. But he did pass in New York. And of course, even though, you know, he got a plum job, if I recall, I don't know, it was with Manhattan DA or the Southern District of New York. Somebody can look that up. But it might have been Manhattan DA, which he shouldn't have gotten, but it was because he was Kennedy.
Sure.
Anyway, he didn't last long.
Well, and I never thought he was much into practicing law because the next thing you know, he's founding a magazine called George.
Right. Right. And with Julia Roberts, I think, was the first celebrity on the cover, and then, you know, plane crash. But getting back to Lou with Jinjin, you know, Jinjin, I think, still has the cult mentality. She thought she shed that cult mentality, because didn't she mention, oh my God, I was in a cult and thank goodness I got out of it. But I don't think she ever did. She never really did. Because this whole thing with Trump and the 2020 election, and that it was stolen, and maggots and everything else, really, it's a cult mentality. So you can present facts and it doesn't matter. So hence she gets in front of the January 6th committee, and, well, you know, in secret or behind closed doors, and essentially says, I still believe that the election was stolen. So she never, ever shed that, whatever it is in a person to make them susceptible to cults. That's my theory. That's my position on that. If she is number six, she may not, you know, even, she'll definitely get, if she hasn't already, she's going to get a letter, a target letter. She may not decide to fess up to a grand jury if it is her, because she figures, my best friend that's on the Supreme Court, we're untouchable. And it's ironic, because wasn't she the one that was talking about the elites on the Democratic side?
All the time. I mean, she wears her right-wing paranoia like a crown.
But the cognitive dissonance, really? You and I are the elite. Dan Goldman is an elite. But he's more elite than you and I. But my point being, we're not going on $500,000
trips to Indonesia?
Excursions.
No, we're not.
Summer.
And nobody's bought your parents' house for you at an unwarranted profit.
Or hanging out at exclusive clubs in wherever that, by the way, Har-Har's exclusive club, I think it's the one with the creepy statue. I think, isn't it, of a Native American in the center?
Is that the
where
one?
They're all sitting around powwowing?
Yeah, isn't that the one in the Adirondacks?
That, my understanding is, I don't know if it was that one, was it Gentleman's Club? Maybe it was a different one. Was it, quote-unquote, Gentleman's Club that Har-Har had, that Clarence would go to every year? And the local community, the local town or city was actually paying. They were the ones paying for their police force to provide security for this exclusive club that belonged to this rich billionaire. That's redundant.
Over-described wordsmith.
Over-described Har-Har's place there. And then finally, the town, I guess the citizens said enough is enough. You know, have them pay for their own damn security. But the point being that they're the elite. Okay? She's the elite.
Yeah, sure.
And yet projecting onto everybody else that they don't like.
Again, it's all projection. It's either all projection or all confession. Yeah. And by the way, just to go back to Lou for a minute. Lou, you're fine. Lou drilled down and said on Wiki it describes Bernie Kerik as a consultant.
Okay.
I still want it to be Jin-Jin. Wait a minute. Wait. I feel a cowbell coming on. I want it to be Mrs. Thomas because she ginned up an insurrection. Oh!
Who said that?
I said that.
Oh, you said that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Give yourself a cowbell, girl. Give yourself a Buddy the Beefalo Bell, girl. Yeah.
We have to have a little fun with this. Some other news, though, darling.
You have to, because it's titillating. Titillating.
Yes, it is titillating.
The Jin-Jin could be the number six. It's titillating. Yes, go ahead.
It's appealing to my penal interest. Probably should have let that one bounce harmlessly off the rim.
Are you sure you're not talking to Dave?
No,
No.
Some other news that is important. There was a little segment on Tuesday on MSNBC that may have gone unnoticed by a lot of people. They had a former member of the Obama administration and presently a medical contributor to MSNBC, Dr. Kavita Patel, on Jose Diaz-Balart reports. And it was a bit, well, sobering. She said, Diaz-Balart said, if you've noticed more of your friends, neighbors, loved ones are testing positive for COVID, you're not alone. According to the CDC, COVID-19 hospitalizations are up 12% from last week, and while we're nowhere near previous levels, it's still raising concerns. And it's interesting because I saw a story from July 23rd, I think it was, yesterday.
I know what you're going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you. Mm-hmm. No, you. Let's check your mind reading abilities.
I caught a headline that there was going to be a late summer COVID spike.
Because they were already experiencing it in China. So the kindly doctor, Dr. Patel, said, well, we're seeing the same thing. We are, as you said, hospitalizations going up. Let me just start with some good news. We're not seeing anywhere near the dramatic rises that we saw in previous summers or previous years. At this point, a large part of the population has already been either infected or vaccinated or both. So what I think people need to know is that I would just keep people on alert that when you're in those crowded spaces, think about the cough and the colds, and sometimes many people don't even have any symptoms. But she did say, a mask can be your best friend. Keep it. Back in time, we had them in our office, in our coats, and in our backpacks. Time to bring them out again, especially as the fall season starts. We don't want to see kids missing school for things we could have prevented.
And that, you know, that is such good advice, and it raises a specter for me because I've attended my 10th, my 20th, and my 30th high school reunions. Our 40th is this year.
Oh.
I haven't heard anything. So I went online.
So you're class of 83?
Sure enough, it looks, I'm class of 83. Yep. And I saw one blurb from one of the popular, she was a popular girl. from high school, who lives like the next town over from me and married, you know, the popular boy, well-known athlete in school. Nice people. That it's going to be, again, it's typically in October. It's typically at the local ski area. And so I've been debating because aside from the fact that I still don't have, I'm still not legal to drive Wanda, I probably can beg a class, a former classmate to ride shotgun with me so I'm legal because I just need somebody to be with me to pull on the stupid emergency brake. But then I'm questioning, is it worth it? You know, because all of those the high school shit coming up in my mind. You know, it's like, if I go, I'm going to bring a mask. Am I going to be like a complete nerd? You know, and it'll be the first time I'm coming to this event in a wheelchair, my power chair. And so it's dredging. It's amazing. It's like, I'm 58. This is fucking high school. Dredging all that high school crap. You know, it's like sometimes I think we've never left high school. But I'm thinking, is it worth it? Is it worth risking getting COVID? Because it's going to be October. And I'm leaning towards it being no, it's not worth it. Because it's like, although I've enjoyed every single one I've been to, I've enjoyed it and I've had a good time. It's not like any lasting friendships have, or consistently lasting friendships have evolved from it. As a matter of fact, the things I enjoy the most are there's a group of women that would get together. We were high school classmates, a group of us. We would get together, you know, every month, every other month for lunch. And I really enjoy those get-togethers with my former high school, female high school classmates. When COVID hit, it stopped for obvious reasons. So that I enjoyed. And that I would feel less weirded out about for some reason. But we haven't been doing them, or at least I haven't been invited to them. Maybe because they've been keeping the group small. I don't know. But that's one of the things I'm wondering, you know, is it worth it? Because so far, unlike you, I have not caught it yet. And I'd rather not. You know, I've had my siblings, my brother and my sister have caught it. My mother had it 3 times, and probably ultimately one of those times is what did her in, although it wasn't directly COVID, but I think it was ancillary. I think it was a causal factor in her passing. My dad doesn't have it. And even like yesterday, I went to give him a shortbread cookies. I say, here you go. He still puts his mask on. I'm like, Dad, I haven't been around anybody. Don't worry. He still puts his mask on. He's like, hold on. He's
ounce of prevention.
Like probably, well, he's probably like, you know, he's probably like Scott, only on steroids. You know, Scott from San Diego.
And that's the thing, you know, a pure speculation.
But he was much older. He's much older than Scott was.
But you know, Scott was so careful.
Right, but we don't know. We're speculating.
No. Some of this is stuff that he said. You know, on air. I do everything in my power not to go out anymore at all, ever.
Well, I know, but we're speculating that is what led to his passing. It's what we would all think is premature passing. It may not have, but probably it probably is a causal factor in it of many factors. But you went to your high school reunion once or twice. What did you do? Did you wear a mask, or was everybody wearing masks?
It was Alabama. They would have thrown me in the river if I'd had a mask on.
Was it outside? At least,
I mean,
no?
You could go outside, but I mean, it was at a yacht club. That does sound terribly bougie. Partially. But mostly
yeah,
no.
So you're like me. You're like
I was freshly vaccinated.
Well, and that's the other thing. I was vaccinated in May, I think, or April. So by the time October hits, it's going to be probably at the 6 month mark. I'm probably going to be at a low level, low level immunity. If I decide to go,
she said. Giving a nice dry cough.
I'm gonna have to try to probably get vaccinated. And I'm like really lazy when it comes to that.
And I've had three of them, and the worst I've had is a sore arm. And I even found a remedy for that. I think 800 milligrams of ibuprofen about 2 hours before, and then 6 hours after the vaccine. And before you get it, knock down a goodly bottle of Gatorade, hydrate, and knock down more Gatorade after, and it's worked.
Well, I can't take ibuprofen, I can't take Motrin, or I can't take anything like that because of my colitis. I have to go with Tylenol, unfortunately. But this last time I've gotten four of the five shots. So the fourth shot, I think, would have been for the B, Omicron B. Is that what it was? Omicron B?
Yes. And by the way, this latest variant is a variant on Omicron again.
So hopefully it won't be crazy, crazy deadly, but the first, the series and then the next shot, I suffered. I was very sick. When I got the second, the main shot of the series, I was really sick. And then the second, the third one, or the first one after the series, I was also sick. But this fourth one, I did really well. And I think it's because I was actually eating regular meals and exercising, and it was just a sore arm. So, and it could be the type of, the vaccine maybe, for this particular variant, maybe it just didn't bother me that much. So I did very well with it. And when I asked my doctor, my primary, and the nurse who administered the shot, I said, well, how long will this go for? Is it another 6 months? Or they're like, they didn't answer. They just said, it doesn't matter. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, it doesn't matter. They're going to go to an annual shot. Don't worry about it. They're going to go to an annual. So I'm like, all right. So I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know anything about it, but that's what they said. That basically the doctor's offices, at least here, at least the one that I went to, was saying, it's going to become an annual shot. Don't worry about it being 6 months, whatever. So I don't know what's going to be available leading into October. But I'm not surprised that there's a late summer spike because, we're not really technically late summer. We're getting there because I did see that headline. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to.
And it's data driven. It's data driven because early indicators of COVID-19 activity, emergency department visits, test positivity, and wastewater levels preceded an increase in hospitalizations seen this last week. That, according to the CDC spokesperson Kathleen Conley. Maybe Rotted FK wants to put her on trial and put her in prison, too. Oh, God, yeah. It's weird, Darlene. How much I despise that man. I mean, I do.
I get it. I felt like, to be honest with you, I felt like that hearing with him was an absolute mindfuck. Pardon the French. I felt like that hearing, and I felt mind fucked not only by Republicans, but by Democrats in that hearing. I was just so, and I'm not saying that Democrats did anything wrong or that they weren't telling the truth or anything like that, but I just felt the whole thing was just a confusing mind fuck. And to see Dennis Kucinich sitting behind him with that goof-ass, oblivious grin on, half grin on his face, and his pierced-tongued wife, you know, angled. She made sure she sat not directly behind him, but off to, like, on an angle so she could get her mug into the, you know, on the camera as well. I was just totally, totally disappointed and flummoxed as to why on earth they would associate with somebody who is trying to tank the candidacy of the most progressive president that we have had, well, ever had. I mean, or, you know, since FDR. And as somebody who is feeling optimistic for the first time since 2020, who's, you know, business took a hit, and it's, the business is now rebounding, and feeling like, oh my God, Bidenomics is working because it's building from the middle class out and the bottom up and building out, and who's furious at how we've been taken for 50 plus years on this whole bullshit of trickle-down economics, which we knew intellectually, but now we're seeing it in we're seeing Bidenomics in actuality, in what it can do. I am reticent to give that up ever again, as an American citizen. And for Kucinich, that asshole, to be the campaign manager and to be supporting this
charlatan, poltroon,
cocktail,
pettifogger
of a candidate, RFK, exactly. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with him and his wife? You know, really, I just, you know, I don't know, was it Tamara who thanked me for bringing, like her, like you, I respected Dennis Kucinich. Never in a gazillion years would I have ever thought that he would resurface in this manner. You know, I remember when he brought up how, and this was during the Obama administration, when Obama was trying to pass Obamacare, the ACA, which had its issues and came out of a conservative think tank, because, you know, Obama is basically, he's basically a conservative president. It was Kucinich that brought up the idea of our medical system should be nonprofit.
Well, I mean, Kucinich was the first one to start talking about universal health care, because, you know, he was a colleague of John Conyers in Michigan. And John Conyers' signature thing that he did every year was to introduce and reintroduce and reintroduce the Medicare for All Act. And I really respected Dennis for saying, and you know, everything that Dennis said wound up being said. But and in 2004, and I was involved in the Kucinich campaign back then, but in 2004, he was talking about universal single payer. And then all of a sudden, by the end of the campaign, and I remember that Democratic nominating campaign, because John Kerry went over the top with the West Virginia primary in May. And lo and behold, by the time of the West Virginia primary, John Kerry was out there talking some degree of universal single-payer health care. But everybody who came after Kucinich was basically bogarting what he did, and I respected that, and I love the fact that he said, listen, I don't want to hear about all this, we can't afford it. we can, and he had the numbers to back it up. He said, we can pay for universal single-payer health care out of the loose change we shake out of the Pentagon's couches. And he wasn't wrong.
And he was ahead of the game because he brought up that the medical system, the medical, you know, AMA, whatever, should be nonprofit. I remember being freaked out at that thought. I remember saying, oh, geez, I don't know about that. Because it was such a novel concept to me at the time. And then as time went on, I thought, you know what? He's freaking right. Because my political, where I was at politically in my thinking was not yet really that developed. I was still, you know, what, in my 20s, 30s, whatever. And I'm like, he's absolutely right. He got pilloried because he said he saw alien craft. He's seen UFOs. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that he was treated with such indignity because it was important to make a clown of him.
Precisely. And they succeeded. And now, guess what? The hearing a week ago or whatever.
Yeah, he flushed it all away.
It's about the UAPs, the unidentified aerial phenomenon. Okay, whatever. Exactly. What the hell happened? You know, and...
Fox News happened. Fox News happened, okay? He got backstabbed out of his congressional seat, Dennis did, by the redistricting after the 2010 census. And he lost to, and I can't even remember who she is. I don't even know if she's in the House anymore. She may have retired. But he lost and had to get out. And, you know, Roger Ailes was waiting there with a check. And it was a nice check. And all he had to do was be willing to go on to Fox, say liberal things, and then let some wingnut POS tell him that he was an insane communist. Basically, he got the Alan Colmes gig. And you know, here's another thing. Matt in San Francisco says, wasn't he the Department of Peace guy? Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to say.
I respected that.
Right. He said we should have a Department of Peace. And I don't know if Bernie Sanders kind of picked that concept up a little bit. But yes, he did say that. I still don't see how that explains where he's at now, outside of the possibility that he takes his personal relationships very seriously, and the loyal is loyal. Clearly, he's friends with RFK and can't see the forest for the trees. I mean, again, he had that dumbass expression on his face through that whole hearing, the mindfuck hearing. And I'm just like, does he not hear what others are saying, what the Democrats are saying? Does he not hear what they're saying? Is he not seeing the same videos that like Dan Goldman put up there where, you know, it is without question. It is RFK saying, you know, about that, was it white and blacks are being, I can't remember the exact, are being hit by COVID, but the Ashkenaz, the Jews.
Yeah, the COVID vaccine or the COVID virus was designed to spare Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese.
Of which Dan Goldman is an Ashkenazi Jew.
Yeah, and he had a fit.
And he challenged him directly and said, does that mean blah, blah, blah? And of course, the brilliant ranking member from the Virgin Islands. Stacey Plaskett. And poor thing, I mean, they were humiliating her. Oh, censoring. She held her own. She was good. man, she was good. She had the game face on. She wasn't taking any crap. Jim, jacket off Jordan. Again, relationships, right? He said, I'm really happy to see my good friend, you know, I'm paraphrasing, Dennis Kucinich, who's sitting behind you. And it shows how, you know, when he was in Congress, he and I got together, and we were able to come up with, we were able to work out, bills and work together. And, you know, he attended my daughter's wedding. They're buddies. Dennis Kucinich and Jim Jacketoff are buddies. Does Dennis Kucinich not see what Jim Jacketoff Jordan is doing? How can he associate himself with these cretins?
Well, I imagine back in his Fox News TV radio Rwanda days that he became besties with a lot of low-life maggots. Don't you?
I just found that whole thing, you know. I found a whole thing of debilitating. I love how Dan Goldman went after that Morris woman from the New York Post, who was just not serious and just not, I mean, she was ridiculous. He eviscerated her, and it was just a wonderful thing to witness. You know, when he brought up the whole thing about, did you actually get Hunter Biden's laptop? Did you get a laptop? Oh, no. Oh, you got a hard drive? I would have loved it if he said, was it a hard drive that was from the laptop, or was it an external hard drive supposedly associated with the laptop? I would have loved to. I wish he had asked that question. And then, but he said, you know, did they do a forensic analysis in the New York Post? Well, yeah, we had our IT people look at it. Yeah.
Right. And so what all of that says is no one's ever going to see that computer because there ain't no chain of custody.
Exactly. And so I highly doubt the New York Post has
That computer is better traveled than Jacques Cousteau, okay? And may have spent some time under the ocean, you know, for all we know.
Yeah, I was just going to say. In a libertarian death sentence.
We're good this evening. We're good. Okay, back to co-conspirator number six. Stephen New York screen-capped a New York Times article, and it sounds like Boris Epstein is pushing out in front along the rail in this race. Damn it.
Okay.
Paragraph 57 of the indictment says that co-conspirator 1, Mr. Giuliani, spoke with co-conspirator 6 regarding attorneys who could assist in the fraudulent elector effort in the targeted states and got an email from co-conspirator 6 identifying attorneys in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Those are the 7 states in the email that Mr. Epstein sent to Mr. Giuliani and that was received by the New York Times. The existence of the email from Mr. Epstein does not eliminate the possibility that someone else sent Mr. Giuliani a similar note. So far, Epstein's pettifogger, Todd Blanche, has declined comment. So has Peter Carr, spokesman for Jack Smith. By the way, here's a little conflict of interest bubbling along. Todd Blanche is also counsel to Nitwit Nero in 2 federal indictments against him. Well, now. So it may be Epstein. But damn it, keep digging, Jack.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think this is the last.
Because Mrs. Thomas helped gin up an insurrection. Still in love with that one.
Hold on 1 second, Robin.
Yeah.
Georgie, go home. Ow! Go home! Pitbull.
I understand. You've got a neighbor pit bull. We have neighbor guinea fowl.
Oh. Yeah, I doubt the guinea fowl is going after my little rabbit. I don't like her going after my rabbit.
The guinea fowl are picking on Socrates.
Oh, no. They're probably good-sized birds then, huh?
Yeah, they're turkey size. Or damn near.
Oh, Jesus.
They're bigger than a chicken, but smaller than a turkey.
Most cats are bigger than my dog.
And one morning, Annette and I got up, and she was like, what the hell is that sound? And came back and said, what the hell is this? I said, turkey? She came back and went, nope, guinea fowl. And here's the thing.
Wow.
The noise a guinea fowl makes, I'm not kidding, sounds like the aliens from Mars Attacks. And apparently they're fond of our front yard, and they come over from our maggot neighbors with their Confederate flag and their... And I've just been looking online, are guinea fowl tasty? Okay, I just pissed off
that's
the
cool.
But they are some seriously ugly birds. Annette, play them some Slim Whitman. I mean, just
I always think of the... Yeah. I just don't want her to. I just don't want her to get my. Some rabbits that I'm beginning, I'm like recognizing their differences in terms of how they, you know, there's one rabbit I haven't seen him in a while. They're very aggressive. Have like a split ear or like a double ear on one side, so I call that rabbit Notch. And I think it's a male, because the males tend to be a bit more aggressive and chase off of the rabbits. And then there's baby rabbit that was born on the property and was just here and ran into the brush when the pit bull showed up. And I still hear her rustling through everything here. So I have to kind of chase her off. She never really seems to get the rabbits. I think it's just a fun thing for the pit bull to do, but I don't want to tempt anything, you know, and see a dead rabbit on my doorstep. But,
no, that would be deeply
upsetting. So, it'd be very upsetting. So, but yeah, those birds sound interesting, and it must be kind of cool to see them on your front lawn, but not cool for Socrates.
Oh, Socrates runs to the back door and then stands outside and yells, "Mom, Mom!" Mom!
Let me in!
There's dinosaurs in the yard!
yeah, exactly. So, I just wanted to weigh in on the Jin-Jin thing. It sounds like it's, I don't know.
There may be more coming.
I think so. I think he's efficient. I think he's trying to get, it'd be interesting when books are written to really look at his background, Jack Smith, and, you know, he's been spending a lot of time in Europe going after some pretty nasty, genocidal maniacs and dictators, and he seems almost untainted in a way by what's been going on here. I think it's giving Merrick Garland way too much the benefit of the doubt, but I'm wondering, you know, was Merrick Garland thinking of appointing Jack Smith a long time ago, but waiting for him to finish off his cases in the European?
That could be part of it. I mean, it's not, I don't think John Durham was in the running.
Hell no.
I mean, John Durham's just a name for laughter now.
Well, and I guess he did not cost he didn't cost us, the taxpayer or the U.S. government, the taxpayer, all that much. I think he was in the $4 million range. So far, Jack Smith, I think, has cost $7 million, but nothing near what the Mueller investigation cost. It's interesting. But it did, I mean, if you don't take into consideration the money that they got from, what's his name there, which I think was $40 million, and he was pardoned, the creepy dude there that Trump knew, that was a foreign agent, didn't register as such. What was his name? Not Michael Flynn, but the other one. And I don't know why it's escaping my memory right now. But he was one of the first ones that the Mueller team went after. But Jack Smith is certainly making up for lost time. I like how, you know, we really don't know who his team really is. The names aren't really bandied about much, but he's got a really good group of prosecutors. They're really good. So I'm like impressed with what Jack Smith has achieved.
I think he's good.
Yeah, and I'm grateful. They got a good judge in D.C. And not a Cannon-type disaster. And I still don't trust her, Cannon, because I think she can still make a lot of mischief. And it could be one of those things where we're going to be focused on the January 6th prosecution, that's a big one. That's probably, I think that's even bigger than, you know,
anything that involves a felony charge violation of the Klan Act. I'm going to keep hammering that and hammering that and hammering that.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, by the way, we got a note from Jude. You and Darlene always offer such a clear legal perspective along with an easy flow, Robin. So for an individual such as myself, it provides me understanding. Hearing friends on the horn is a great way to end my day. A special hello to you both. And Horn family, even though we may never personally meet, yet each of us are connected on a deep and caring level.
I like that. Thanks,
I do,
Jude.
Too.
I love that.
Yeah, Jude's a good soul.
That's spiritual.
Yeah.
It's energetic. Yeah, I think we have to be careful and not get too focused. I mean, it's important to keep our eye on what's going on, what's going to happen in D.C. But we don't want that to give Eileen Cannon, like, cover to wreak havoc and sow mischief and do her bullshit down in Florida, because everybody's so focused, you know. We are curious to see. I'm assuming, I doubt that a hearing is going to occur, January 6th thing, before the election. As these cases seem to take years to prosecute, and we're looking at May for the documents debacle, right? I think it's May.
I think so, yes.
And this indictment on January 6th is an even bigger thing. So all more reason to be sure that he loses again and that Biden beats him like a drum again. So we can see how all of this.
But the thing is, this indictment is, I guess, some sort of a purity test. Because I have a story here, just saw it a little bit ago, that the Texas GOP has openly declared that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. They said, we believe that the 2020 election violated Article 1 and 2 of the U.S. Constitution, that various secretaries of state illegally circumvented their state legislatures in conducting their elections in multiple ways, including by allowing ballots to be received after November 3rd, 2020.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Come on.
I mean, they went on. We believe that. I mean, this is coming across like some sort of fucking maggot Nicene Creed. You know, we believe Jesus was crucified and died and rose on the third day, and that he rules in heaven or whatever palaver it is. We believe that substantial election fraud in key metropolitan areas, Chicago, significantly, Detroit. Affected the results in five key states in favor of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. God damn it. We reject the devil and all his angels. No. We reject the certified results of the 2020 presidential election, and we hold that acting President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. was not legitimately elected by the people of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, amen. You know, I think when I've been saying it lately, I think people have been not particularly taking it too terribly seriously. But I swear, this is... Darlene, this is nullification, okay? This is the same bullshit we were dealing with in 1850 that we had to burn some sense into them to get them to get over. And here we are again.
Here we are again.
Honest to God, I'm getting
and
to where I'm feeling.
No,
it's time. It's time. Yeah. Shut down every military base in Texas and, I don't know, move it to New Mexico.
That is brilliant. Absolutely. I don't think.
And then invite them to secede.
You know Joe ain't going to do that. You know Joe Robinette Biden ain't going
to
do that.
No, he's not. But it's time to kick these bastards in the teeth a few times, even if only rhetorically.
Well, that's the only way. That's the only way. And I mean, you know, it's so sad.
And see, the use of that, Steve in New York points it out, the use of that metropolitan areas, there's just too many of those people voting in the metropolitan areas. Yeah, that's a dog whistle. This is what happens when you let the black people vote. Daggum it. Damn Voting Rights Act of 1965. We've been trying to get rid of it. And we just can't quite finish the job.
You know what's so sad? And, you know, thinking about what I learned in school, you know, in high school, about World War II, and the history of that, and just to think, like, it, you know, my childlike mind and back then, and oh no, we defeated fascism and it's no more. And clearly it's been there. It's still been there. It's been bubbling under the surface.
It
never went away. And it's resurging. And it's so sad when you think about all the lives that were lost. All the American lives, you know, everything, you know, and to think that it is a real threat once again. So the only way is, like you said, to kick them in the teeth and put them back in, under the rocks that they crawled back out of from under. That's the only way, because they're still going to be there. So they have to be humiliated and afraid and not permitted to get a foothold. And the problem is we've got
so much gaslighting going on. I think it's going to be really hard to do it this time. And then when you have, you know, like the RFK thing with that hearing and accusing or trying to equate factual pushback or factual counter arguments with censorship. In other words, you know, that Stacey Plaskett was somehow censoring JFK. And essentially having the likes of, not the likes, but having, you know, Denis Kucinich sitting right there somehow legitimizing the bullshit that spews out of RFK's mouth. Even his own family members are saying, we don't support what he's doing. We don't agree with him. We're Kennedys, and this is not what being Kennedy is about or what we stand for. And it didn't matter. When you have people like that Dr. Mercola as an example in terms of COVID, that piece of shit, he's a major anti-vaxxer. He's like crazy anti-vaxxer. Fucker took almost $400,000 and PPP loans for his business. To do what? To spew anti-vax rhetoric. There are so many forces out there that are just fighting against what the drag queens originally meant. Our founding and framing drag queens, you know, I don't know. Did they come up with the concept of the marketplace of ideas, or did that come after them?
No, that's after them.
But the marketplace of ideas has been sullied and it's been tarnished and it's been, you know, I think it was a great concept because it was sort of like.
Well, I first started learning it in conjunction with the correspondence between. The cokehead, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., and America's most brilliant thus far indigenous jurist, Learned Hand. And that's where we get that's where we get the idea that the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is for you to have more good speech. Which was great in the early part of the 20th century when the most complicated communication device was a radio. I don't think either Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. nor Learned Hand, and this is, you know, time after time after time, this proves to be our undoing. I don't think either of them ever contemplated a Leon Scum or Rupert Murdoch.
Or the internet.
Right, yeah. Instantaneous global communication.
But I would think on some level, with the Learned Hand, certainly. I mean, I would think on some level, the premise was that there was some level of honesty for truth being, you know, undergirding that marketplace of ideas, whether it was a good speech or the bad speech. At least that's what I thought. I could be wrong.
Within that concept, there's this idea that people will make rational decisions about the marketplace of ideas, and
right.
Well, you know, I don't think either of them had any idea that there would be a section in the marketplace for cracked, rotten eggs, rancid beef, rotting vegetables, and that. There would be people good at marketplacing who would be, oh, no, come on over here. This shit's great. And that people would stampede to it. And that's Fox News.
Well, and during that mindfuck of a hearing with RFK, and it was a good argument, and please disabuse me of this, they brought up the ACLU. And how the ACLU supported the right of certain American citizens of the Nazis in here in the United States to be able to have freedom of speech. Well, the ACLU did it. Was it that hearing? I think it was. Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Because the lady there, Wiley, the African-American woman, she wants to run, intending to run for governor of New York. Smart woman, tried to plead to people's better angels, which is like just a waste of time. Brilliant woman, but to counter her, they brought the ACLU because she used to be an attorney for the ACLU.
Liberal. Sorry.
But the ACLU said that you have to protect even the most egregious and heinous of speech.
Odious.
I.e.
Yes.
the fascist. Odious.
Our buddy Irish Dave sent along Brandenburg versus Ohio the other day, I'm sure, or a little bit ago, not the other day, an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, that's mm-hmm. all about political speech and what you can suppress and what you can't. And Steve said, I agree with everything y'all are saying, but what's the alternative? The alternative is a rational interpretation. People are allowed to say things that absolutely are poison in society here that you cannot say in other developed nations.
Exactly.
You just can't do it. And they are no less free, and they are no less able to express themselves.
And they're actually doing quite well.
I mean, it's kind of like the Second Amendment in that regard, Darlene. Because with the Second Amendment, it's an anachronism, and it is misinterpreted. Because there's nothing in the, D.C. versus Heller notwithstanding, there's not a damn, the word own and gun or own and firearms does not exist in the Second Amendment, and it is entirely, the idea that, mm-hmm. that it is entirely the hallucinogenic fabrications of the fevered minds of people who get up every morning and bow toward the Heritage Foundation and turn and bow toward the Federalist Society and then turn and bow toward the National Rifle Association.
So there had to have been a historically based interpretation or meaning behind the phrase keep and bear arms. Because, Dr. Bill had said, that every word in that Constitution was chosen, was specifically chosen. And
great deliberation.
And so you can also say that words that weren't in there for a reason. Because it would have been very simple for our founding and framing, or for the framing drag queens, to basically just say the word own.
Right, but I mean, again, it's been law school trauma night all night long here on the horn with you and me, Darlene. So we might as well finish the same way. Tell me about bailments.
Well, that's not in there either, right?
Well, no, but keep and bear is, and that is a reference to a bailment. Because the reference to a militia speaks to, let's be originalists. That speaks to the fact that the militia, there were local militias, our standing army wasn't shit. And so communities were responsible for their own defense. You know, just like ancient Rome. Oh, no, not ancient Rome. Where the freeman farmer would put down his shovel and pick up his sword and go off to defend the you know, patria. And so militias would have armories. But if there's a lickety-split problem that you have to muster the militia for, everybody having to jump in their buggy and hitch old Dobbin to the sleigh and go zipping off to the armory. No! The community owned the firearms and entered into a bailment agreement with the community members, whereby the community members, as de facto members of the militia, would keep and bear the arms and had thereby a possessory interest in them, but did not have a title ownership in them.
Right, so they were like on loan.
Yeah.
A bailment, like, yes.
Yeah, bailor and bailee.
Exactly. So, and to a certain extent, I mean, we see that on military bases, which of course, and it's a contained community, and even though Republicans like to bullshit and lie about it, on the military bases, the individual servicemen, say a few, maybe like MPs who are there for security, but they're not supposed to be in possession of AR-15. They don't have that on them when they're on the bases. They're basically locked up in an armory type setup, is my understanding.
Yes.
They don't own their armaments.
No, when you're
they're trained. Yeah.
When you're at Fort Runnemuck, everybody's not walking around strapped. That's what the MPs are for. And, you know, a junior officer does not walk into the offices of a senior officer with his gun drawn and say, clear! Because you can't run a military that way.
And this is why the so-called textualists and the originalists on the Supreme Court are full of shit.
Careful, Ketanji Brown Jackson is an avowed textualist. It's the originalism that bites you in the ass, and it's the originalism that's proven to be a fraud by D.C. versus Heller. You can't tell me that a bunch of people with law degrees from Harvard and Yale and Stanford and the like don't understand what a statement of bailment looks like, because that's all the Second Amendment is. And I just went to a draw spunky school of law at on the Monongahela River.
Well, Amy Covid Barrett considers herself to be a textual. I thought.
Yeah.
I thought that was her big thing. So, where does she stand on the Second Amendment?
Oh, she would, you know, she would gladly fondle the barrel of an AR-15, maybe even shoot one of her own adopted kids with it. As long as it made the right wing happy, as long as it was what her husband told her to do, you know, the handmaid.
And Kavanaugh, you know, again, mythos, mythology, you know, just bullshit. he actually looks at the history. You know, he's a big history buff, and, you know, in his originalism,
he's a big fan of the history that exists only but in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his mind and Pasper brains.
Right. And so, with the lack of the word own, you know, and what you're saying about bailment and about the armaments were on loan, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's all.
they're murderous. They're murderous individuals, because look at what they did with New York, how they bootstrapped Governor Kathy Hochul.
Sure, and the Bruin decision partakes of the same toxic bilge that Dobbs does, saying that, you know, there's got to be a rational connection to a history and tradition of blah 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 blah, which is just a way of saying we suck down some stump liquor and there's a result we want to reach, and we're going to reach it if we have to hallucinate to do it.
But it creates a conundrum. I mean, here, and this is where I just keep getting, and maybe you can help me with this, because we could say, look, this is what it originally meant. So people shouldn't own guns. Or if they do, it's a privilege, and they need to be well-regulated, as it states in the Constitution. But then they have a point when they say that women didn't have rights back then. You know, how do we get around that? You know, it benefits us and it doesn't.
Sure, it curses and it crowns. We're at the end of the program, and I've got to roll out. But you're absolutely right. You know, I'd love to see an opinion where somebody writes, "Hey, it's worth remembering that as regards these rights, at least let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
Right.
A majority of this court would not enjoy those rights under originalist interpretation."
And I would include T.J. Roberts, because he's got a disability. He takes a header every once in a while. Doesn't he have some issue with his brain and his balance?
Maybe.
I would count him.
Sure.
There are very few on that court that really should be there.
Under an originalist interpretation, absolutely.
I would probably, like, it would probably be just Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. I think, you know, Alito, isn't he Italian?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, at one point they were basically white. Weren't they considered black people back then?
No, they weren't white.
They weren't considered white. So, essentially, I think we're just looking at Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. Only two of them are legitimate.
Jesus, you know, what a shitstorm.
Isn't that, you know, based on, you know, obviously I don't agree, you know, but, you know, I don't agree with that. But basically, if they were to carry that originalism to its full extent, there's really only two that are legitimate. And the whole lot of them are illegitimate, but, you know, I think so far, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who I think is the most brilliant jurist on that Supreme Court right now. Thank you, Joe Biden. I think outside of her issues with her books, you know, Sonia Sotomayor, but, Elena Kagan. I mean, Elena Kagan's been a straight player. She's recused herself multiple times. Blah blah blah. In the beginning, and she kind of plays it by the book.
Would you be surprised to know that I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Elena or Sonia, and Ketanji have already gotten into it with each other. They've sniped at each other.
Yes.
At one point, one of them told the other to go back to school.
Really?
Yeah, but by the same token, Sammy Bad Breath, and I only found out about this because I read an article about, you know, it wasn't just that Sammy Bad Breath complained to the Wall Street Journal, you know, his source, or his diarist. It wasn't just that he complained to the Wall Street Journal that, you know, Congress has no right to regulate the Supreme Court. It's really? Really? Is the Aricep not working, Sammy? But later on he said, you know, those little ladies over there on the minority, you know, they they all analyze things the same way. I don't know why I'm rednecking him, but they all analyze things the same way. On the other hand, we in the majority, are, especially the menfolk, are very, very thoughtful and not prone to hysteria like the womenfolk are.
Well, first of all, he's a fucking liar.
And he's probably the biggest misogynist who sat on that court in generations. And that's saying
a
thing.
But he is the most unsophisticated. I mean, actually, quite frankly, I'm really glad that he is talking and doing these articles, because when you know, and these interviews, because when you listen to the crap that comes out of his mouth and his thinking, it's like his level of sophistication is absolutely in the crapper. You know, he's not a great thinker. He's not a great jurisprudential thinker.
No, and he's not a good person.
He shouldn't even be on that Supreme Court, huh?
I said he's not a good person. But Darlene, I got to roll out of here.
All right,
we're a little bit overtime, okay, but what a wonderful conversation! Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I did too.
To stay on this long, but we just keep going.
Well, that's how conversation radio works. You have a good night.
You too.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye.
And I got one last question from Jude. Jude asking, and please expand on the KKK and how it is a key in the Trump indictments. Well, it's not the KKK that's it's the fact that the fourth indictment charge of the D.C. indictment is a violation of the Klan Act. The Klan Act is a statute that was passed by the Congress and signed into law by President Ulysses S. Grant, that gave the federal government the power to prosecute violations of civil rights perpetrated at that time in the states that were under Reconstruction. It was specifically passed to deal with the insurrection that was serious and terrifying and awful, that was well underway by the time of Grant's administration. Everybody likes to talk about Grant being corrupt. He wasn't nearly as corrupt as people think. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of that was created by butthurt Southern states, because he took the Klan Act and he wielded it like a cavalry saber. And he sent federal troops into the South. And he destroyed the Klan, okay? He destroyed the Klan. And he prosecuted him, too. And that law is still viable. It has been used since it was passed. And not only related to things touching upon the Civil War. Deprivation of the rights of a citizen of the United States. And so the irony is beautiful, and it would be nice if the multimillionaire for-profit media would point out the fact that Trump is charged in one instance under the Klan Act, because that would probably get the maggots to a point of fever-pitched hopping and grunting and poo-flinging. And frankly, at this point, I don't care. I'm all for calling them out for who the hell they are. Metropolitan areas! At least they didn't say urban, you know? So that's the program, everybody. Look, we all needed a breather after the sprint to the end of July and yesterday. And so the goose egg this evening is okay. And we'll get back at it tomorrow. Sometimes I just don't, after talking and talking and talking about fundraising, I just want an evening where I don't have to. So tomorrow we'll be at 5:50. And we'll see how that plays. And just, I'm not going to talk about it, but I had a very important, had a very important little administrative date today. And it means a very great deal to me. And it made me terribly, terribly, terribly happy. So without going into all the details, I'll just say that I wanted to share that happiness with you. So thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve, and thanks to Roger. Steve messaged me early on and said, "Oh my God, Washington Journal is a zoo." I bet it was. I was getting ready for my appointment, and I didn't get to watch. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.Live. Please remember to like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment on the podcast itself. You know, you can just click on the podcast every evening from my Facebook or Scum account. And once you go to that the podcast platform or whatever platform you listen on, you just type in something. And it really, really does help. You know, like, subscribe. If you're listening on TuneIn Radio, click that little heart button. One of these days we'll have 1,000 TuneIn listeners alone, and that'll be awesome. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. There's a story on my Facebook page about my friend Junior Walk, who uses a drone to catch coal companies and their wholly owned subsidiary, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, violating the living be Jesus out of the law. It's a good read. And maybe go over to my Facebook page and have a look. Listen, y'all. Stay safe. Be thinking about your booster. It's time. If you've managed not to get COVID all this time, keep not getting COVID. Get your booster. Go out and buy a box of masks, unless you have plenty laying around, because you're going to want to start wearing them again. Because, again, the maggots are dirty and infected. They don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. And they don't care much about themselves. They're willing to die for their orange god emperor, you know, to own the libs. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And, of course, if a jiggling, adipose, waddling wad of petty grievances, jealousies, and unjustified anger comes down the sidewalk at you singing Billy Joel, "I'm an innocent man," avoid Nitwit Nero like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.